this hour of the Jason Rand Show, brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
Oh, we now have a date for tolling coming to Highway 99. It's going to happen in November. This is the latest effort to take money from drivers while providing them absolutely no meaningful service in return. This is all about taking money. This is all about making traffic worse. This is all about charging you to get out of that bad traffic. Traffic will 100% be worse in the coming months. Worse than it currently is, as hard as that is to imagine. Thanks to the tolling on Highway 99, because starting Saturday, November 9th, you're going to be hit with a toll rate ranging from $1 to $2.25 if you have a good-to-go pass. Now, what happens if you don't? What happens if you don't have one of these passes attached to your windshield? Oh, they're going to add $2 more per toll. So $3 to $4.25. That's ridiculous.
There's no perfect time for starting the tolling, and we've just narrowed in. This is the right time. We want to get in front of the work that Sound Transit's going to be doing. And I'm sure come spring, there's going to be something else out there that people want us to delay the tolling. And we really need to get it going.
No, we just got to get it going. We've been going long enough without taking your money. That's Patty Ripstello of WashDOT. Now, we've already seen traffic patterns change because the geniuses decided not to give an exit or entrance in downtown Seattle for some reason. Because that makes a whole lot of sense. And so as a result, people are using the tunnel exclusively to cut through downtown. Now, this, I suppose, is fine. Let's say you live in Shoreline and you're trying to get to SeaTac and you want to avoid I-5. You'll take Aurora down, you'll get onto Highway 99, and then you'll connect to SeaTac. Okay, cool. But, of course, the majority of the people who are driving in that part of the city, mornings and afternoons during the drive times, what are they trying to do? They're trying to get to and from work in the downtown Seattle area. And so as a result, they're not able to take the tunnel, which means they're either going onto the surface streets, which are already clogged to death with cars, or they're getting onto I-5, which is already clogged to death with cars. This is going to make that even worse. So Ripstello admits that things are going to get worse, although she seems to think that at the end of the day, it's going to correct itself.
In the worst case scenario, it could be up to 50%, but recognizing that's similar to what we saw with 520. You know, that first week, 2 weeks, month, people are testing different routes out. We expect people to go back to the tunnel once they've tried out different routes.
Yeah, why would they go back to the tunnel if they tried out a different route if their job or location that they're needing to get to is in and around downtown Seattle? I mean, part of this is thinking that you're going to be so desperate to get out of the traffic that we're now creating in downtown Seattle that you're going to be willing to pay $2.25 in mornings and afternoons just to get across downtown Seattle. So we're talking about a couple miles. We're going to charge you that each way. And for those of you who are upset with this, for those of you who don't think this is going to impact you at all. Let's say you're listening in Marysville. You never, ever go into downtown Seattle, or maybe you live in Bellevue and you work at Microsoft in Redmond. Oh, this isn't going to help me. This is going to be what they do all across the state in order to raise money for different transportation projects. Because what we know is at some point, you can't just rely on the gas tax because cars are getting more energy efficient, meaning they're spending less of the gas that they have, which means you're spending less of your dollars on gas, which means less tax dollars going into transportation projects. And so we're going to move to either tolling pretty much everywhere, or we're going to do a pay by the mile. Now, they'll likely do the pay by the mile system. Now, I suppose that's a little bit more fair for someone who is paying into the system but doesn't really use it all that often. I like to say that because I don't drive, this is good for me. But the truth is, I still benefit from these roads because I've got, number one, I'm on a bus, but number two, I've got people who are making deliveries to my home via, you know, UPS, FedEx. So they're actually using the streets that I rely on, but I'm going to get a free, now to be fair, I'm not going to complain about not paying the pay by the mile, but I'll get upset on behalf of people like Tom or producer Peyton who actually have to drive because you guys are going to get hit.
Yeah, I feel like this one hits closer to home for us than it does for you. I don't know why you're...
I'm a man of the people. You know what people say about me? Jason Rant's selfless. He cares more about the community than he does about himself, his career, his ego. He pushes that aside all to focus on the people. And this is an example of that. People say it all the time.
Who says that?
People. What do you mean who?
Name one person who said that.
Dasani.
Dasani?
That's his name. Was that a problem for you?
Well, I just noticed there's a Dasani water bottle right in front of you.
So that's an unfortunate coincidence. The guy's name is Dasani.
Okay. It's just, you were just looking in that direction when you kind of struggled to remember that his name was Dasani.
Okay. Well, then what if I move my water bottle to the other side and I remind that his name is Dasani?
Again, you looked back at the water. I don't think Dasani's a real person.
Well, people say that. They might not. They think it, at least.
Okay.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the media?
So Lara Spencer was forced to apologize for what amounted to be like an offhanded remark about Prince George and the fact that he is taking ballet as a little kid. And she was on Good Morning America, and she kind of made a little bit of a joke.
Prince William says George absolutely loves ballet. I have news for you, Prince William. We'll see how long that lasts.
So why is that offensive?
Well, it's not news. She said, I have news for you. We'll see how long that lasts.
And then she laughed because it's funny that it's a young boy taking ballet and it plays against gender stereotypes. And so she made a joke about it very much off the cuff. And by the way, every single person I saw, including George Stephanopoulos, on that panel, they laughed. And yet Laura Spencer is the one who got completely ripped on Twitter all day on Friday afternoon and into Saturday. People were just completely ripping on her. So she decided today to apologize for mocking the little prince.
Oh my God. I did.
Ugh.
The comment I made about dance was insensitive. It was stupid. And I am deeply sorry. I've spoken with several members of the dance community over the past few days. I have listened. I have learned about the bravery it takes for a young boy to pursue a career in dance.
Oh, so brave. They pirouetted into my office. And then they yelled at me. They scolded me for all of this.
And I've step ball changed.
This is like, okay, we were talking a little bit on Friday about the Gillette ad, right? And how they were going after, quote unquote, toxic masculinity and trying to change the behavior of boys, including this, taking a basic position that all boys are inherently evil with their masculinity and we have to change some of that. So we're trying to socially engineer. This is an example of how they're trying to socially engineer. That's my guess. Now, on the one hand, if this young boy how old is he? He's either 2 years old or a month old. I'm not entirely sure. He can do ballet, so I'm assuming he's...
I thought he was six.
There you go. 6 years old. I can never tell how old kids are. If the kid chose to go into dance, then of course we should not have any concern with that. Maybe prep the kid to say, hey, sometimes people are stupid and they don't like that little boys dance, and then maybe prep them that way. But of course, we shouldn't be making fun of a six-year-old who chooses to go into ballet or, well, tap dancing. You can probably say something. But ballet and all this other, don't say anything. But more often than not, this just reminds me, and I don't know why, and I don't know if it's fair, but it reminds me of all those stories that we covered last year. And it was around this time last year where there was just a rash of stories of primarily fathers who were getting their young boys to play with dolls. And they would only take them into the doll section of the toy store because they wanted to show how woke of a parent they were to break down the barriers and say, you know, we're going to stand in the way of all of the social constructs of what it means to be a boy, quote unquote. And at some point you're like, okay, I get what you're doing. If the kid wants to play with dolls, of course you should be okay with that. But forcing a kid to get into something that they're not interested in inherently seems more like an experiment. And I'm wondering if that's what's best for the kid. Laura Spencer there said nothing wrong. It wasn't even a joke. She was making an offhand comment that I don't even think was a quote-unquote microaggression.
Well, it was wrong. She said, well, I have news for you, Prince. Is it Henry?
Some.
Yeah. Let's see how long that lasts. You're not presenting news. That's not news.
Okay, but that's the least of her concerns there.
I just want to be factual.
CNN said this was happening outside of the Good Morning America studio.
Spencer interviewed three of ballet's most celebrated male dancers to learn about their experiences. Before her remarks, a large group gathered outside of ABC in Times Square there, and you can see them dancing in protest.
That's my kind of protest.
Thanks, Allison. That's her kind of protest. They dance like everybody was watching.
Footloose?
Well, the quote was dance like no one is watching, but because it was a protest.
Oh.
Just throwing that out there. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Rancher. I was walking in earlier today, and our brand new producer, Peyton, who's taking over for Tom. Tom's last day is tomorrow. Peyton was all like, oh, your hair is so perfect today. What's going on? What is the special occasion? And I said, well, number one, my hair is always amazing. But number two, I'm going to be on Tucker Carlson later on today. So on Fox News tonight at 9:30 our time, be sure to check in as we talk about my latest blog, which is a reaction to the ridiculous piece in the New York Times claiming that Seattle has pretty much figured out how to deregulate the war on drugs. It hasn't. And so we'll talk about that. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
So Joe Walsh, former Tea Party congressman, formerly named the most corrupt congressman who was in office at the time, he has stepped forward and he is going to challenge President Donald Trump. So we're talking about it. But really, we shouldn't be talking too much about it because this is a guy who's just trying to change his brand after he desperately tried to start a radio show. He desperately tried to push the whole Tea Party far to the right talk show host. Didn't really work out. And once he saw that other people who were formerly pro-Trump are starting to turn on him and getting embraced by those in the media, he was all like, oh, maybe I should switch things up. Maybe I should be anti-Trump. And then, you know, try to run for president and get into the White House, even though we know it's not going to actually happen, but maybe I'll sell some books and get on TV and extend my brand a little bit. That's all that this is about. And it's not ever even going to come close to being a success because of his previous brand. Joe Walsh has spent years being just as brash as President Trump has been on Twitter, although arguably Joe Walsh did it first because he certainly got into it as a politician before Donald Trump got into it as a politician. And as a result, people are calling him out on a whole host of tweets that are out there. He was on MSNBC yesterday. The anchor, Candace Gibson, started to grill Joe Walsh on all of this. But Walsh says, no. I'm way different now than I was in the past.
I don't think he's a racist. It's just all whatever benefits Donald Trump, that's all I care about.
Yeah, he's the same Donald Trump. Are you a different Joe Walsh? Because yeah. you've had similar views.
No, you're right. In a way.
You are.
Candace, it's like I've had my road to Damascus moment.
I don't know what that means. You're going to have to explain that a little bit more. And I've seen interview after interview after interview claiming that all of a sudden he's seen the errors of his way and now he wants to correct it. Only he doesn't want to correct it, right? He wants to run for president, which leaves this huge, huge gaping piece of hypocrisy coming from his campaign right from the get-go.
Congressman, you know that you've sent out tweets that insulted average Americans, including Americans, of course. You've apologized for using the N-word on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Yeah, in an op-ed recently for many of those things. But isn't it hard to kind of put the toothpaste back in the...
No. Because, again, here, think about this. I probably sent out 40,000 tweets over the course of the last 5 years. Uh-huh. Are you going to find 200 to 300 where you say, oh, my God, Joe, what were you doing? Why'd you say that? You probably would.
So, okay, that's a lot, right? And it's probably more than 200 to 300 different tweets. But just real quick, Producer Tom, how many times have you said the N-word on your Twitter feed?
Zero.
Are you sure? Because you sent out quite a few thousand tweets.
But there are no
N-word
tweets.
Okay.
That have the N-word in them.
I double checked just to be sure for me. Yeah, none. Wasn't there at all. This whole idea that, oh, well, you know what? Who among us hasn't used the N-word from time to time to make a point on Twitter? I apologize, but you know what? If you go into anyone's account, you'll be able to find No, you won't. Go into my Twitter feed. You're not going to find that kind of content. You might find edgy content, which is totally okay, but the whole idea of running into racial slurs and repeatedly calling President Obama a Muslim who shouldn't be president, it goes a little bit too far.
I did say Fredo once, but just once.
Okay, you
and
should have
apologized.
Okay, but the different times. At that point, we didn't realize that Fredo was apparently a racial slur. Now, thanks to Chris Cuomo, we believe that it is a racial slur. Now, to be fair to you, you were also talking literally about the character and the movie.
No excuses.
Okay.
No excuses. I've learned.
Well,
that's
mature.
To the Italian community.
That's very mature of you. Really do appreciate that. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So the apps that you might use to track your sleep might actually make your sleeping even worse than they currently are because you end up focusing on the results that you get, and the results might not be an accurate reflection of what actually happened because your app sucks. That, according to Dr. Vijesh Kapoor. He's the co-director of the UW Medicine Sleep Center. And he says we need to be more careful about these kinds of apps or different devices.
There's a tendency for folks who have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep to try too hard and to focus too much on sleep. And that's where these apps can just be an outlet for that type of a tendency, which tends to make it harder to sleep.
I feel like he's talking specifically to me because I have a general hard time getting to sleep. But oftentimes, because I use an app and I use it every single night, it's just a sleep tracker of sorts. And it uses the microphone on your phone to tell whether or not you're getting a deep sleep or if you're moving around, because it can hear you moving around on your bed or in your covers. And sometimes I wake up and I feel perfectly fine, like, wow, that was a great night of restorative sleep. And then I look at the app and it scores you on a score of 0 to 100 and it'll come in at like 63. I'm like, but I feel fine. Everything was fantastic.
App is telling me I'm not sleeping deeply enough or I'm not doing this. And that can create anxiety that really doesn't have to be there.
So I don't get anxiety at the end of all of this. I get a little bit confused. But I kind of just assume that it got it wrong and I move on. Now, I know that I have a weird relationship with the web as it relates to my health, as I'm assuming most people do. You go on WebMD and you say you have a cough and it says you have AIDS, you have cancer. And you're like, but I just have a cough. And it's like it's a normal cough. I was just looking it up to see how long it's going to last. And you kind of get freaked out. I've never gotten freaked out by the results of these apps. I usually, and I don't know if this is a healthy relationship, I just assume it's lying. Like, it's just lying to me.
I didn't know they were using my microphone.
Some apps do, not all of them. The one that I have, actually, it tells you that it uses your... there's no way that it's true, because, again, it gives me low scores despite feeling well-rested.
There have been a few reviews out there that have shown that, first, that most applications haven't been validated, meaning they haven't been directly compared to something we use in clinical practice, like a full sleep study.
No kidding.
And when they have been evaluated, the ones that just reside on the cell phones typically don't seem to correlate very well with what's going on with other measures that are used in clinical practice.
So I expect that your app is not going to be the same as having a sleep study done at the UW School of Sleep or any professional location. I think all of us can be assured that... I don't know how many people go into this and look at your app and say, oh, this is way better than the $10,000 a night sleep study that I could have done if only my health insurance covered it. They're not actually getting that from the app. So I don't quite know what the takeaway from this is other than relax about what you find on your app. You'll be okay. If you find yourself questioning the data, it's probably because the data is bunk. If you see yourself trusting the data a little bit too much, maybe pull that back a little bit and trust your instinct. Trust the way you feel when you wake up. And if you have any concerns about a serious potential sleep condition, whether it's insomnia or sleep apnea or whatever, go see a doctor, which he happens to be, and so he might benefit off of this. But I trust him because I like him.
I thought you never sleep.
I don't really sleep. I can't fall asleep unless I'm heavily medicated. And I usually go through a sort of a cycle of different medication to get me there because if I stay on it too long, it stops working. So I'll do the whole melatonin for a bit, and then I'll do a mix of melatonin and tryptophan and H-something, whatever, in this new tablet I got. Which, by the way, is amazing. And then sometimes Ambien, and then sometimes Benadryl, and then I go back and I start the whole thing again.
Well,
I wake up fine. I just can't fall asleep because my head is so big, because my brain is so big and active, I can't turn it off.
Well, as long as you're not on whiskey anymore, that was just unhealthy.
Okay. We said we weren't going to talk about that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I show up one time to work, completely slosh, yelling at people, hurting people. And I'm like, oh, it's got to become a big thing. Can't talk about it. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. So over the weekend on Brian Stelter's show on CNN, a guest criticized President Trump, comparing him to Mao and Hitler. And of course, Stelter did the right thing and call him out on this. But oh, no, he did absolutely nothing. And we'll see what he's blaming for his lack of response. When we come back, you've been listening to What's Trending, brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. Welcome back to the Jason Rancher. Don't forget, you can go behind the scenes of the show by following me on Instagram. Follow Jason Rance on Instagram once I'm at the Fox News studios later today, as I'll be on the Tucker Carlson show I will go behind the scenes, take some video and photos, and you'll see what it's like when it's really, I'm just in a tiny room with a green screen behind me. That's it.
Gosh, quit spoiling it.
I mean, I know. It's just I don't want to set. I realized as I was pitching it, I was setting expectations too high.
You're not actually on a scaffolding with the city in the background at night with the stars in the sky and the full moon?
I'm not somehow that close to the Space Needle with it right behind me. It turns out that there's a little bit of TV magic in that case. But when I'm doing all the makeup, I take lots of photos because, God, do they just take it on me like no one's business.
Okay, fine.
Say what you will. It takes me 3 days to get it all off. But also because I only shower every other day.
Yeah, we can tell.
Okay. Alan Francis is a crazy person. Alan Francis is a psychiatrist, and I have no idea whether or not he's a good psychiatrist, but he's also someone who is a deep ideologue. This is a guy who absolutely hates President Trump. Now, there's no doubt there are lots of people who hate President Trump, the same way there were a lot of people that hated President Obama. But if you're going to have a psychiatrist on, who's going to delve into psychiatric issues with the president now that Brian Stelter over at CNN is obsessed with calling the president mentally unfit to stay president. Like, maybe don't go with the person who's a crazy anti-Trumper, because then he ends up comparing Trump to Hitler.
Lumping the mentally ill with Trump is a terrible insult to the mentally ill, and they have enough problems and stigma as it is. The second issue is that calling Trump crazy hides the fact that we're crazy for having elected him, and even crazier for allowing his crazy policies to persist.
Just real quick, and I'll let this dummy finish, but does that sound like legitimate psychiatric analysis? I mean, think about it. Brian Stelter has him on because they want to talk about how unfit Trump is and he shouldn't be president. Okay, fine. We can have that silly conversation, the conversation you didn't want us at all to have about Hillary Clinton when she literally passed out into the arms of a Secret Service agent. Push that aside for a moment. When you're giving that kind of analysis and you lead with, actually, it's not that this is not crazy. We're the crazy people for actually putting him into office. You're not actually giving us any content on what you're supposed to be an expert at. Not at all. You've gone away from being a psychiatrist, providing some legitimate commentary on the mental well-being of Trump, and you got into just wanting to be a political hack.
Trump is as destructive a person in this century as Hitler, Stalin, and Mao were in the last century. He may be responsible for many more million deaths than they were.
So Mao responsible for what? 30 to 45 million people being murdered in his regime? Hitler, of course, responsible for the deaths of over 20 million people, lots of them Jews, as he tried to completely get rid of the Jewish population in Europe. Like, can we not go into comparisons to Hitler ever unless we literally have another Hitler who's going after Jews? Is it possible? And I know that this is a crazy ask on my part, but, you know, call it my Jewish bias. Is it possible not to belittle my religion's history by not using Adolf Hitler as the boogeyman to compare to any politician you don't like? Number one, it's lazy. Number two, it's historically illiterate. And number three, it's stupid. It's just stupid. You don't sound like a smart person making that argument. You sound like a lunatic. And you're the person lunatics are supposed to go to in order to get actual treatment. Now, this on a show called Reliable Sources. Brian Stelter said nothing. No pushback whatsoever. Not even a little bit like, okay, do we really want to compare him to Hitler? Nothing. And he got called out for not responding on Twitter by a whole bunch of blue check marks on the right. In fact, I saw a couple on the left calling him out. And Brian Stelter had the worst response to that ever. He sent out a tweet. I agree that I should have interrupted after that line. I wish I had heard him say it, but I was distracted by tech difficulties. That's why the show open didn't look the way it normally does. I had two computers at the table, etc. Not hearing the comment is my fault. Okay, let's go with that for a second, because I've certainly been in a position where things have gone wrong in the studio, and maybe I lose track of what's happening. Do you not have producers? Do they not have any producers at Brian Stelter's show to just get in his ear and say, like, I know you're distracted, but you just compare Trump to Hitler. Might want to follow up. Like, nothing at all? I just don't buy this. And by the way, what undercuts his excuse is the literal video of him staring directly at Alan Francis as he's talking.
With that befuddled look that's he's always on Seltzer's face. Like,
I mean, that's his look. That's just his face. I don't understand. And then on top of that, Francis has a history of making this exact type of attack, not just on Trump, but on conservatives in general. Go to his Twitter feed. It's filled with this hyperbole. It's filled with this nonsense. Do you literally not do any research whatsoever when you're having an expert to talk about psychiatry? I get it if they want to have Alan Francis on talking about a political issue, right? Giving his political take. Okay, that's fine. Again, it's lazy and ridiculous, but at least it fits there. You're choosing. What bothered me the most about this, you've got Brian Stelter, who goes out of his way every single week. And if you follow him on Twitter, he does this every day. He's supposed to be the guy who is better than everybody else. He'll remind you that he's better than everybody else, that he has this moral high ground, that it is up to us to question the president's mental acuity. It is up to us to call him out. It is up to us to ask these questions. And he does it in such an obnoxious way that you would expect him in a position like this to actually step up and say, okay, you know, let's course correct a little bit. But no, that's not what he's doing at all. He's leaning into this crazy, pardon the pun, that Trump is crazy.
So something's wrong. There are lots of theories about what it is. There are some doctors who think they know. There are others who say we shouldn't speculate. There are ethical questions about even having this conversation at all. But we can't tiptoe around it anymore.
Anymore? You've been not tiptoeing at all. You've been talking about this for how many months now? Or really, since the beginning of the presidency. Remember that narrative coming out of CNN that there were folks in the White House questioning the president's mental health, and they're wondering if they're going to have to intercede? Like, that's been a narrative this entire time. It's not been consistent, right? It's not been consistent. And I love that they're looking at what the president has said on Twitter and said in public over the course of the last week, pretending that this is any more or any less crazy, quote unquote, than he's spoken in the past. This is Trump's personality. It is why so many Republicans and so many Democrats, when he announced he was running and when it became more clear that he was going to be the nominee, it's why so many people had some concerns. Not because they thought he was mentally unfit, but because they realized he doesn't talk like a politician. He does not talk like a president. Now, some people clearly like that. He is an entertainer. He is a personality. It would be weird if he stepped away from that personality. I find myself deeply uncomfortable at times with the way he acts, with the way he speaks. I'm not shocked by it, and I'm not going to read into it to pretend, oh my gosh, man, Trump is off his rocker. He's crazy. I'm literally concerned. He might start a nuclear war with Iran because I don't believe that. This is his personality. Now, whether it's his authentic personality or not, I have no clue. But you go back. And it was funny because over the weekend, I was looking at some older clips of interviews he did back before he was running for president. Some of the interviews he's done on Howard Stern, for example. This is how he sounds. This is how he speaks. The moment that he stops sounding like this, that's when you guys could probably be a little bit concerned, or at least wonder if someone else took over his Twitter feed. This has been his personality from the beginning. And all we're seeing right now with Brian Stelter is him trying to revive this tired narrative that he's mentally unfit because he sees an opening. He sees a weakness. But it's not going to catch on. Do you think anything that happened over the course of the last week, any tweet that's happened so far during his presidency, do you think that scared away Trump's hardest supporters, the hardline supporters? No. Do you think it changed anyone's mind if they hated him already? No, they still hate him. The people who hated him still hate him. The people who love him still love him. The people in between, people kind of like me, because I don't love or hate him. I like a lot of his policies because they benefited the conservative movement. I'm sitting here and saying, hey, you know what? Under him, the economy is really strong. I have a better paycheck as a result of him because he's taking less taxes away. And of course, that was also GOP-led. Oh, and we've got two really, really strong conservative justices on the Supreme Court, in addition to the record number of federal judges that this administration has appointed. I like where he stands on Israel. I like how he is a fighter for American Jews. I don't like the way he always talks about it, but he's clearly on my side on that. And so I'm looking at that, and I look at the other side. Do I want Kamala Harris? No. Bernie Sanders is a crazy person. Elizabeth Warren is just as crazy. You got Joe Biden, who, if we want to have the conversation about mental health, okay, let's at least include him if we're going to do it. I'm not shocked by any of this. Are you? Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho Live, the online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in, which is something that very few people did over the weekend on CNN, where they hosted a town hall event with Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York. He, of course, is running a future failed campaign for president. I mean, it's an ongoing failure. He's not going to get the nomination. He's not going to end up in any future debate stages. And so I guess they're throwing him some airtime for some reason. And you know, they didn't really promote it all that well, because I didn't know that they were doing this until Mediaite had it's a blog that talks about the media, had a piece on it. And they said it was awful. I don't think it was as bad as they're saying, but it certainly started off poorly, because Bill de Blasio, who happens to be tall, he's 6'5". He really likes to have some banter with whomever he's talking with about his height. Here he is getting into it with Ana Cabrera from CNN.
How's that height advantage working out for you?
Which, by the way, to be fair to Bill de Blasio, the dumbest question I've ever heard. That's not a good question. How's that height advantage? That's not a good question. Not a way to sort of break the ice.
He has a better view on the podium, so we can see kind of how the crowd's reacting in the back, and he can, you know, tailor his questions.
You can't come up with a good response to that. It's just not a good question.
How's that height advantage working out for you?
Remember, the taller...
He just said, hey, Anna, so my polling right now is at 0.2%. Not working out so well. It's not working out so well. So I'm hoping to talk about the issues here on CNN rather than you ask about my height, although that would have been rude of him.
Remember, the taller candidate has won every general election for president, but I think three times only. There's only three exceptions in the history of the Republic. So if you want to get rid of Donald Trump, choose the tallest candidate.
Well, that's not good for the Democrats. Joe Biden is 6 foot. Elizabeth Warren is how tall could she be? She doesn't seem like a very tall person. She's 5'8". Bernie Sanders, I'm willing to bet, is about that as well. According to the Google machine, he's 6 foot. And Trump is 6'2" or 6'3". Yeah, so that means Donald Trump is going to be the next. We should have just canceled this entire town hall at that point. Ana Cabrera could have looked at you and was like, dude, sorry to say, you're not going to be the nominee. So I guess we should be spending time talking about that next term for President Trump. Then he gets interrupted by a crazy protester.
Okay. Please. Please be respectful. Please be respectful. We have more audience questions to get to.
You know, by the way, kudos to her for being able to sort of like bullet point so quickly, one after the other, those points. Because I can't do it that fast. I can't fire off that many clear statements one after the other while other people are getting mad that I'm speaking.
Please be respectful in the audience so we can get to all the questions that we have among those people who are here.
So I wonder what they do with these people after they kick them out. Do they go like, you know what, kudos for that little outburst, because you're giving me a little bit of a bump in the coverage we're going to get for this, because otherwise no one would care about a Bill de Blasio town hall. Meanwhile, since it's related to this, there was some chaos at the summer meeting for the DNC in California, because progressives who show up to these things are pretty much, they're the crazy people. And so you can't really have productive meetings with crazy people. You hear the yelling. Does this work when you chant, let us in? I did this once outside of a sold-out concert. I stood outside and I said, let me in. You know what they did?
They didn't let you in.
They didn't let me in. Well, I stood out there for about 45 minutes, and then I realized it wasn't going to work. And then I got a hot dog. Then I came back just to see if it would happen again. And then 45 minutes later, the show was over and people were wandering out. At that point, I wandered in and then I bought a $47 t-shirt.
That's an awesome story.
Yeah. They actually, in this case, they did get let in, although they kind of forced themselves in. And there was some light shoving.
We got this. We have a right to be here. This is the public. All right. Okay. You got this, everybody. Don't touch my
table. Oh, she pushed it.
Come on.
Let me in.
Yep. Everyone in. Everybody new is needed. Public who wants to be in.
I speak truth to power. Don't you touch me. You're acting like the gazpacho police.
They won't let us in there. They're attacking us and pushing us with
attacking.
Shoving us.
Attacking. They're all like, you can't just wander into this meeting. We're going to have to get you out. You're trying to come back in, so I'm going to lightly push you, but they're attacking. It's an assault. And then weirdly, if you thought that all the craziness was happening outside of the DNC summer meeting, when you go inside and you hear them speak, it doesn't seem like it's any better. So at this point, one dude's trying to talk while the other is talking, and he puts his hand up as in to say, hold on, stop, let me finish speaking. That doesn't go so well.
Don't raise your hand at me. Stuart, put your hand out. Put your hand down. Don't put your hand up at me, please.
And then you hear the protesters in the back screaming again. Oh, my gosh. I mean, on the one hand, I kind of feel bad for these folks who are trying to organize and have meaningful meetings about what the future of their party looks like. And they have to deal with these lunatics outside and some of the lunatics who are part of their committee board. But then I also sit back and say, you kind of created these people. You've given them, you've enabled them to engage in this kind of behavior. And as much as I saw some protests at the RNC, at the national one, when they actually elected or chosen the nomination for Trump, they didn't act like this. And yet you go to the DNC, there were a lot of crazy people, both in and out. This is what the party has created. 1-800-465-8770. If you text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you my latest blog, which is also available at KTTH.com. We've got two more hours coming up right here on AM 770 KTTH.